Welcome to the Album Nerds Podcast with your hosts, Don and Dude.
Should old acquaintance be forgot, never brought to mind? Should old acquaintance be forgot? It's Album Nerds time. This is the Album Nerds Podcast. I'm Dude, I got Don with me. What's happening, my friend? 2025 is going bye-bye. Bye.
Here's to the year behind us and the one ahead.
Wow.
Sounds like something Casey Kasem would say or something.
Yeah, that was moving. My bowels.
Knew that was coming.
Did you though?
We're getting predictable.
Yeah, that comes with age. You just repeat yourself, especially the things you think are funny that no one else does. So we are the Album Nerds. We love albums, the album format, talking about them, exploring new territory once in a while. I think we prefer the old stuff, but you know, you always got to check out the new stuff. And we've got a great show for you today. We will be highlighting two albums that Don and I have chosen as some of our favorites of the year. We're going to kick it off by mentioning a few others that we considered and enjoyed as well. There's a long list, but we'll just cover a few. And then Don will be asking us the deepest of questions. So deep. Then we'll have some shout outs to some albums that are coming in 2026, things we're looking forward to. And then we'll get into what we'll be doing next on the Album Nerds Podcast on upcoming episodes, and look forward to that. Make sure and hang around till the end. But this time, it's all about 2025 and our favorites.
That's what I'm talking about!
In 2025, Avatar the Seed Bearer led the global box office. I've never even heard of that.
Is that a porn? Smurf porn.
Yeah. While Squid Game Season 2 ranked among the year's most watched streaming series.
Still haven't watched that.
Yeah, me either.
Well, we canceled Netflix. We'll get back around to it when we run out of other stuff to watch.
Taylor Swift Eras Tour was still going on and dominated, setting new live music records. The year was also marked by AI-assisted art, booming vinyl and physical media sales, and massive stadium shows from Beyonce and K-pop acts that turned concerts into immersive multimedia events.
Yeah, that's common.
Didn't Oasis get back together too?
I believe so, yes. That's exciting.
Yes. So today, both of us will present our favorite albums from 2025.
Yeah. And we want to make it clear, we're talking favorite. We're not talking the best artistic, la, la, la. The things we enjoyed the most or came back to the most. And it's tough when you're doing what we do weekly. We listen to a lot of albums for these shows, and exploring new stuff can be kind of a palate cleanser, but also a little bit of work. So on our digging sections at the end of each episode, a lot of things that would have been considered we talked about over the course of the year. So go back, check out those episodes. Don, what are a couple other favorites of yours you want to tell us about just a little bit?
Well, I mentioned this one, in digging at some point this year. Lucy Dacus, I think that's how you pronounce it. Her album, Forever is a Feeling. Now, she was actually part of my record of the year a couple years ago. She's part of Boy Genius.
Oh, right, right.
Oh, you know what? That might have been my second favorite of that year. But yeah, so she's a Virginia-based songwriter. Reputation for thoughtful storytelling and warm deadpan vocal delivery. It's actually a concept album about falling in and out of love, which is
I don't think anyone's explored that before.
Yeah, it's new. Well, here's a track called Ankles, not Cankles.
You almost said Cankles, didn't you? Now, not so much on this song, but when I listened to this album, it felt like the analog days of like Radiohead. It made me feel sort of the same things.
Kind of melancholy and moody. Yeah, I definitely can hear sort of a Benz vibe to it.
Yeah.
Another one I've really been enjoying a lot, and you know, I'm starting to think of maybe it was my favorite of the year, Sparks. Their album Mad with an exclamation point. They're this long-running Los Angeles art pop duo, Ron and Russell Mail. They're kind of all
over. Are they brothers?
Yes. Yep. I mean, so they've been around forever, and they, you know, used to be kind of glam rock. Then they went sort of power pop and then synth, but just really quirky, but also like not just silly, but kind of intelligent, but also not really pompous. It's an interesting album. Here's a track called In Daylight.
Are they talking about in the boudoir or on the dance floor?
It could be either, I think. Yeah.
It's sort of like I kept thinking one of the Pet Shop Boys must be, this must be a side project of his or something. It's kind of flamboyant and witty. There's some lush synth pop and art rock sounds, and there's satire here, right, on modern life?
Oh,
is
yeah.
that what's going
yep.
on? Okay.
You know, Sparks is kind of like the dream theater of, like, New Wave, I think, where, like, all the artists love Sparks, but, like, no, you know, nobody knows who they are.
Wow.
Yeah.
So, the opportunity to rip on Dream Theater. Nice work.
Sorry. I just always remember, like, you know, anybody who was, like, a musician like Dream Theater.
But, yes.
Yeah. Nobody else. Just kidding. No, I actually like him.
Yes, me too.
What about you?
So there was a lot of stuff. There was a lot of interesting things, projects from members of Greta Van Fleet that I really liked, like all sorts of stuff. And I really do encourage people to go back and check those digging sections out if they're interested in hearing about the things that we were digging throughout the year. But one that stuck with me was Curtis Harding and his album Departures and Arrivals, Adventures of Captain Kurt. It blends soul and funk and psychedelic rock and cinematic pop. And there's this semi-conceptual persona, Captain Kurt, a traveler. It's supposed to kind of be like, it's not an actual astronaut, but someone who's disconnected from the Earth, from the, you know, touring and whatever, disconnected from the people in his life, sort of feels alone, like he's in space.
He's a rocket man.
Yes, a rock. It man.
I'm a rock it man.
But the departures are like the leaving, the arrivals are the growth, you know. So let's listen to a little bit of Hard as Stone. So very analog and warm and prominent bass lines, vintage synths, psychedelic effects. It draws from like classic soul, Curtis Mayfield, that kind of thing. But the concept enhances the thematic unity of humankind and all that stuff. I really dig this album.
Yeah, I like it too. I've only listened to it once, I think. But yeah, I really like I like his vocals. I like the sort of, I don't know, the mix of sort of modern sounds, but also that like vintage style. It's cool.
Yeah, it captures all the right things. And I really feel like this is what Curtis Harding has done on all of his albums. He has taken music he loves and turned it into something new and awesome. Secondly, Mammoth, their third studio album, The End, was released in October of 2025 with multi-instrumentalist Wolfgang Van Halen. Famous family.
I've heard of him.
But he does all the writing and performance on the records and has been collaborating with his producer, Michael Elvis Basket. It was recorded at 5150 Studios, which is his now. 10 tracks, blending hard rock energy, melodic hooks. The songwriting is getting better and better, and the sound is evolving, and I'm enjoying seeing the growth of him as his own man and own artist. So why don't we check out a little bit of Same Old Song? I mean, it's a blend of rock, post-grunge, melodic hard rock, and lots of good riffing and good guitar playing. He's getting better and better, and the album explores themes of personal growth, self-definition, you know, the usual suspects. What I like about this is I love the Foo Fighters. This reminds me of that same aesthetic, but from a perspective of a kid that grew up on the Foo Fighters and bands like that. So the influences of the 90s and 2000s paired with this talent, I think there's going to be some really good stuff coming from him as as things continue.
Yeah, I've listened to this a couple times and I like it. But on your recommendation, I did go back and listen to that Billy Corgan podcast with Wolfgang. Oh, it was really good.
It's really good to get to know an artist like that in that way, especially when Billy Corgan's asking the questions.
Yeah.
The guy from Smashing Pumpkins, by the way. But highly recommend that podcast, The Magnificent Others. Great conversations. Go check that one out as well. All right. The final picks are in. The favorites have been thumbs upped. Let's get to our cha-cha-cha choices.
You choose me?
All right. So my favorite record of, what year was it?
2025. Wow. This is what happens when you get old, people. What year was it?
Yeah. So my favorite record of 2025 comes from Sam Fender, somebody I was not familiar with before 2025.
Okay. All right. Good to know.
So this is the third studio album by the singer, songwriter, and guitarist, born Samuel Thomas Fender in North Shields in the northeast of England in 1994. Kind of known for, gritty. I don't know if gritty is the right term. The kind of blue collarish rock road songs.
Road-worn.
Yeah, road-worn. he's been compared to people like Bruce Springsteen. But of course, he's British and his accent does come through at times. And he has a very, I think his dialect or whatever is very specific to the region he's from.
Okay.
The album is called People Watching. And let's start off with the opening cut, which is also the title track, People Watching.
What slapped me in the face was this starts off sounding a ton like The Pressure Machine by The Killers.
Oh, yeah.
From, I think that was 2019, maybe. Mm-hmm. It's very similar. And that was compared to Springsteen, yep, and all that Heartland rock. So, my first impression is, okay.
Yeah, I definitely hear that comparison. Sam Fender does write all of his own songs. This one is about anxiety, isolation. Feeling like you're on the outside looking in.
So much of that. You're not a true artist unless that's what you're feeling.
Yeah, supposedly, and I don't know if he said this or somebody else described it this way, but it's supposed to be like he's sort of observing everyday scenes. So these are like overheard. Yeah, these are overheard conversations and, dramas in people's ordinary lives. So, it reminds me of a lot of, this Heartland rock or whatever. I get kind of a Bruce Hornsby vibe at times,
I could see that.
Like, I don't think he's as gritty as like Springsteen. No. He's more smooth or softer. Even kind of, remember like Don Henley, the End of the Innocence album? I feel like it has some of that vibe too.
Well, and it has influences that guys like Springsteen and Mellencamp and stuff didn't have, which is Indian alt rock, which come into play here too,
Yeah. I mean, I still, and I guess it's the Englishness or something, but I get a slight Morrissey vibe. It was like Morrissey meets Springsteen or something.
Morristeen? I read something about Fender's late friend and mentor, Annie Orwin, and that the song was based on walking to and from her elder care home or something. Did you?
Oh, that makes sense. Actually, so like the final track on the album deals with his grandmother too. I didn't read what you just said, but it certainly makes sense. All right, well, here's another cut from the album, Wild Long Lie. So this one is a kind of a moody, slow burn, kind of has a country twang to it. And it does feature contributions from Adam Granduciel, who's from The War on Drugs. He gets production credit on this album as well.
Okay.
But, the lyrics explore the conflict of loving your hometown while also needing to escape it.
That's very Heartland.
Yes.
Yeah. I guess that's maybe where the parallels and comparisons lie, is in that everyone, from wherever you are, it's all, at a certain point in your life, you probably want to escape where you are. And then as you get older, you learn to appreciate it. And all that kind of stuff. Yeah. So,
you know, this certainly isn't a groundbreaking album, and it's not something that I would have appreciated years ago. But now, as I'm aging or whatever, just this kind of sound is, you know, very appealing to me.
Especially when it comes from younger people too.
Yeah, he's in it, I think, around 30.
Yeah, I think for us old guys, we're drawn to new music that maybe tips a hat to the stuff we grew up on. It feels like we're not all that different. We're all still feeling the same shit, just with through a different lens. Yeah. And or in this case, through the lens of our phones.
Good point.
But it's still, you know, people are still people, and we, you know, everyone still goes through the same kinds of experiences.
All right. Well, was there a track you wanted to highlight?
No.
Okay. Well, I do feel like you're keeping the album at arm's length.
Why don't we try to fix that and listen to Arm's Length? Yeah, I like this one. It kind of explores that conflict of wanting connection, but also wanting to maintain distance. And I think in this age of social media, it's like, you can know me, but do you have to know every freaking detail, everything I've ever said, or
yes,
even if it's something in, you know, my past that does not how I view the world now? Like, I just feel like it's that, just take what I'm giving you, you know, mm-hmm, don't take any more. And it blends soft rock and indie folk with that melodic style. It's pop leaning, but I like it. It really reminds me, like I mentioned, The Pressure Machine, one of my favorite, I think it was my favorite album of that year, 2019, I believe. It is character sketches, and sometimes it's him, but The Pressure Machine was about all these small town people in Utah, and it was overheard conversations. It was that, all that kind of stuff, and I think this is really well done, and because in England, I pictured it's cloudy and rainy and trench coaty, you know, while sitting on a park bench watching people interact. And at first, I was kind of resistant to this because it's derivative, mm-hmm, but it isn't. It does feel fresh, and as you get to know Sam, and I don't know the previous work either. I didn't listen to any of the others, but you kind of get to know Sam and how he sees the world, and it's cool.
Yeah.
So you get to know him inside out, really. You know, what do you think about it?
You really do. All right, let's get to the closing cut. Remember My Name.
Let's it go a little bit there. He sings a little more, I think.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Yeah, it's even somewhat theatrical or something. Or it even has like an Irish vibe.
It does, but also
like a Danny Boy.
The pipes are calling. Maybe because of the almost churchy sound of it, it reminded me a little bit, like I had flashes of Jeff Buckley intonation, you know, maybe influence.
Yes, I'll buy that.
No offense, Sam, but not vocally.
No,
in that,
he's not in that league,
no, but in that category. Yeah. But I still felt it. I felt that underpinning melancholy and sadness that is laced into all of Jeff Buckley's work, and I felt that on this song in particular.
Melancholy and infinite sadness.
There you go. Back to Billy Corgan.
So Remember My Name was written as a tribute to his grandparents, specifically from the perspective of his grandfather, who was caring for his grandmother during her struggle with dementia. So, you know, again, you know, as we're aging, these are the kinds of things that, you know, that we're dealing with and thinking about, you know.
It sucks.
Yeah.
Don't get old, people. Find a way. Any young people listening, if you're science geniuses, figure it out. Right. Stop the aging. But what? I also felt some, and I don't want to uncool this or anything, but some Sting-ness here, like Sting's solo work, mm-hmm, the earlier solo work, you know, like the Clash of the Blue Turtles or whatever that album was, the first one after he left the police. What is it?
It's The Dream of the Blue Turtles. Yes. Close.
And also like that Fields of Gold album and stuff. It just little bits. And I love that.
I definitely hear that. There is a brass arrangement by the Easington Colliery Band.
Oh, those guys slap.
Yeah.
That's so uncomfortable saying slap. It sounds so stupid. But it was fun.
Yes. All right. Well, it's a good time to rewind and reflect on people watching. I'll begin with my clickbait headline. Brit pens guitar ballads for sensitive blue-collar American dads.
So, I think that's the blue-collar man is also a sensitive man.
Yeah, it can be, anyway. So, discussed the vibe of it. So, all the artists that do the heartland rock stuff well, it's, they're capturing the struggles. So, it's, it's an anxiety and mm-hmm. isolation and fear.
And it's all people watching. I mean, the stories, the Bruce Springsteen stuff where he's talking about coal miners or whatever, it that's part of what that heartland. It's about real people and real lives and not excess and all that stuff. So my clickbait headline to describe the album, Americana Muscle, Britannica Soul. People watching is about streets, stops, and staying put. And there is some soulfulness here that I think Sam brings that isn't there with some of the traditional stuff. But it's cinematic, observational rock album, human storytelling. And as a first exposure to Sam Fender, it feels like real. And I want to explore some of the other stuff. I'm intrigued. Mm-hmm. The album unfolds deliberately, watching, reflecting, and then kind of landing on family memory and legacy. These are the important things from observing people and how they interact with each other. Mm-hmm. So it's about watching life happen and understanding your place. And it's cool.
So, killer to filler, I think there's a lot of, strong tracks. Crumbling Empire, I like a lot. That's a darker one. Rain Me In, Chin Up. I don't really have any fillers to point out. How about you? Yeah.
TV Dinner was cool. Oh, yeah. Quiet.
Yes.
Kind of uncomfortable. Acoustic.
I love the idea of like a TV dinner sort of representing like true loneliness.
Yeah. Eating alone, not even cooking.
You're hungry, like man.
Giving up on. Yeah. Well, yeah. And do people still call them TV dinners?
Probably not. I don't know.
But yeah, like frozen meals. Yes. Now microwaved. In the old days, they were in like tin foil things you'd throw in the oven. I also liked Nostalgia's Lie.
Ah.
Kind of the danger of romanticizing the past,
yes.
Which we do a lot of here and have been throughout this conversation. So maybe I got to listen to that song today to get my mind right. Yeah, I thought the Crumbling Empire was ambitious, but kind of crowded production-wise. I don't know. It was supposed to be about like decay, right? But there was a little bit too much going on with the instruments, I thought.
It's kind of cinematic.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Maybe it's a bit much.
But nothing that derails the album. I mean, the album does what it set out to do. And I think that's important to note.
Yeah, so, production. Apparently, this one was recorded over 2 years. And and this was a deliberate decision because I guess Fender felt that his previous two albums were kind of rushed. So took some time with this one. So it was co-produced with, as I said before, Adam Granduschel from the War on Drugs, and also Marcus Droves, who has produced Coldplay and Arcade Fire.
Okay.
It's not, despite being sort of a Heartland record, it's not raw. It's pretty polished, actually.
Correct.
Yeah. And clean.
Yeah, I think it's the spirit of Heartland Rock. It's not. Yeah. And that's kind of
It's Tunnel of Love, not.
There you go. That's Springsteen's follow up to Born in the USA that was fuller. I think that's a good parallel, actually, Don. I know it was a joke, but it turned out to be brilliant observation.
Well, thank you.
At its best, the production elevates the emotion and scale, but at times it does feel slightly overstuffed. And maybe that's putting in that extra time, you know, and tweaking maybe a little too much. But again, I don't know his body of work, so I can't 100% say that.
That's a good,
that was my feeling.
That's a good point, because I did see the words like wall of sound being used for the, you know, for the production.
Yeah, and the dynamics and sequencing are important, and they maintain the flow and pacing, and it feels over at the right time.
Yeah. Replay value. I mean, it's, you know, it's my favorite of the year, supposedly. So, you know, and
it's a favorite of the year. Right. I mean, these things shift.
Yeah. It's not like I spent all year listening to it. You know, it's really been in the past few weeks that I've gotten into it, but I've listened to it a lot and I still enjoy it. So the album's only 48 minutes long, but I do feel like it does get a little long.
Yeah. I mean, maybe it could have been 43 or 45 instead, but I thought it was good. I thought it was a pretty good length, personally. And I usually get bored pretty easy. So, too long for you?
Just a little.
Okay.
Well, you know, I guess, you know, because it's so new, you know, we don't really know what its legacy will be. I mean, I hope that it encourages, you know, maybe other artists outside of our heartland to, you know, to make records like this. Yeah, I mean, I love this kind of observational songwriting. And yeah, I mean, I hope it, you know, continues to, you know, live on with younger artists.
Well, I think it positions Sam Fender as a storyteller first and a rock star second. Mm-hmm. And I think that's the important distinction of people who could climb, who could have a legacy, who could influence music and continue to make it and continue to grow. But for new listeners, I think this is a strong entry point. I will go back and see what else Sam has to offer, but Heartland Rock in Britain, interesting. Heartland Rock, I mean, every community has a heartland, a center of the community, and I think that's a really good place to start as a songwriter, and I'm glad that Sam took that path.
Yeah, and my understanding is that Sam Fender is quite popular in Britain, and he's won Brit Awards and stuff like that.
Oh, cool.
So, you know, maybe his star will start to grow in the United States. All right. Well, People Watching is a solid rock album about ordinary people, everyday struggles, and trying to hold on to hope. Give it a spin.
Excuse me. I'd like to ask you a few questions.
All right, it's time again for Deep Questions by Don. Right. And it is a time to do some deep introspection, right?
Sure.
And maybe, you know, look for areas of improvement. So we've done this question in the past, but I think we skipped it last year. What are your musical resolutions for 2026?
I would like to start playing my guitar again.
Yeah.
I restring it, then I hang it back up on the wall, and I just don't, like, I need to get, if I can get my calluses back, I was never like awesome or anything like that, just good enough to enjoy myself. But yeah, your fingers stop hurting after a while if you get those calluses built up. So if I can do that and fiddle around a little bit with the guitar, that would be nice.
You could start playing on the show a little bit.
There you go. Mean, sure. This is not to try and be a musician. This is just to not waste the two guitars hanging on my wall.
Okay. All right. Well, I think I've mentioned before that I, you know, want to learn more about classical music, and of course I don't. So I've set like a specific goal. So I found this record that was done by the London Philharmonic Orchestra, and it's available streaming. Came out in 2009. It's called The 50 Greatest Pieces of Classical Music. And I realize this is probably, you know, like now that's what I call classical or something. Right.
Yeah. I mean, to like a classical music connoisseur, it's like you're having a bunch of reunites and wine coolers
But just like White Zinfandel, like this could be like my doorway in, you know. So I want to spend time with each track and look at the context of them, and maybe, you know, just learn, and then eventually I'll get to the point where I have a refined palette.
Is White Zinfandel the pink one?
Yes. Yeah, because there's a real Zinfandel that's like the good stuff. But
I don't really know too much about that. But.
What are your musical resolutions for 2026? Let us know on our social media, like Instagram and Facebook, at Album Nerds.
I don't think we talked a lot about country music in 2025. We had a couple moments.
The Lainey Wilson.
And then, of course, on our holiday episode, we listened to Casey Musgraves. But I went with Carter Faith, a North Carolina native, country singer-songwriter, emerged in the early 2020s in Nashville. Her music blends classic country, Americana, 60s pop, and has this sort of modern, heartfelt storytelling. So it's not unlike Sam Fender in that way. Mm-hmm. Like, it takes the past and reinvents it. The album is called Cherry Valley, came out in October of 2025, produced by Topher Brown.
Good name.
Yes, very, very good name. Cherry Valley was positioned as a major debut rather than like a tentative introduction. She had done a few EPs and things in the last couple of years, but it's really her songwriting credibility and live performance strength that have driven. It seems like some success is happening here. The title refers to a real road sign that Faith encountered in Tennessee, but within the album, it becomes a symbolic place, a mental and emotional landscape that represents the ambition, longing, escape, heartbreak, and self-discovery that goes on throughout these songs. And it's structured as a collection of moments and moods. It's not a linear narrative, but it does kind of feel like it at times. But it's warm and analog feeling. Prominent use of pedal steel, guitar, piano, orchestral flourishes, classic country storytelling. And why don't we get into it? Let's listen to a little bit of the title track and opener, Cherry Valley. The song was written by Carter Faith, Ashley Monroe, and Andrew Petroff. She has co-writing partners on all but one song on the album. I think she's continuing to establish her craft. But Cherry Valley is not like her real hometown. That's what I assumed at first, but it's like this sort of scene setting for the album. She said that the name Cherry Valley was sticky in her brain and became a mental happy place. And that's where she built the foundation of the album from. So it's like this creative dreamland representing her emotional and artistic journey. How did this strike you, Don? What were your thoughts?
It's a good introduction to the album. I mean, remember we did the Ashley McBride album a few years ago, Lindyville, which was, kind of telling stories of this, fictional place. And so I just eat that idea up. I love it.
Yeah.
But, I was taken in by her voice. There's a sweetness to it and a vulnerability, and again, she's not, belting it
pushing
out.
It. Yeah.
Very kind of. There's a lot of parallels with Casey Musgrave, I think. But
I think so,
but
too.
But not the same. She's got like her own vibe.
A little, I guess, twangier.
Yeah, she's got some Dolly Parton in her, I think.
Oh, yeah, definitely. I was trying to put my finger on that. You nailed it there. So why don't we get into another track? This one is one that I just thought was funny. It's early in the album. Things get a little more serious towards the end of the album. But this one is called Grudge. That's when I was like, I like this album. It's a fiery, tongue-in-cheek, antagonistic anthem about holding on to resentment towards someone who basically talked behind her back, said that she couldn't write songs, and she hasn't let it go. I saw her in an interview, and she was asked about it, and she's like, I still hate that bitch. So, they haven't made up. Maybe on the next album, there'll be a makeup song.
There's a Betty, too, right, that she doesn't like, I think. I can't remember.
Betty comes later. Oh, okay. We could talk about that later, but Betty, she's more jealous of than anything. But anyway.
That's right.
Faith herself said the song started as a joke and a fun way of expressing the sarcasm. And she got really good reactions in her live shows, and that's when they decided to work it into the record. But it's more playful and humorous, but it just kind of sets that tone of this person throughout this fictitious world of Cherry Valley. And like you said, the dramas that occur within, she's involved in all of them. It's her story loosely told. Yeah, I love moments of levity, and when like that actually caught me off guard the first time I heard it, and I rewound. Skip back a little bit to make sure I got that right.
Yeah, this one feels more kind of Lainey Wilson-ish I think. And, you know, I think she's similar to Lainey Wilson with some of the lyrical things, you know, the little clever lines and stuff.
Yeah, there's a lot to playing with, making little, I guess, Easter eggs, little winks to other things.
Yeah.
Was there a song that stuck out to you?
Yeah, this one speaks right to me, of course. Sex, drugs, and country music.
That's the life of Don. Six-string Cupid. Great, great line.
Yeah, so Sex, Drugs, and Country Music was co-written by Faith, Lauren Hungate, and Topher Brown. This comes right after the opener. We talked about, like, fun lines. She says something about, you know, once I tried all three, I found my trinity. Mary Jane and Adderall. she's pretty clever. And when I saw the song title, I was thinking more of like a rougher Lainey Wilson track, but it's actually more kind of, it's got that old timey sound, kind of honky tonk feel. It's another clever one.
Yeah, it's a metaphor for like escapism and coping mechanisms for heartbreak and things like that, but delivered, like you said, with that playful wit and vintage classic country musical style with the pedal steel. Yeah, it's about coping, but being sincere and sassy at the same time, which is kind of the whole vibe that she's putting out.
Yeah.
And then the wailing and the wailing, you know, like you could take it either way.
Yeah.
But definitely she's a fan of Waylon Jennings, and I think he gets mentioned a couple times throughout the record. He does. So
yeah. And Eric Church too, right?
Yes. And in one of the songs, she says that she's a Patsy kind of crazy. Mm-hmm. You know, Patsy Cline crazy. Just nice little nods to things. Yep. Once you know some are there, then you're trying to pick them out. So you end up listening to the record more carefully, because I wanted to find them, and it was fun. All right, why don't we get into the final track, with a little more serious. You know, she's taking this journey throughout the record of her boyfriend, you know, breaking up with her boyfriend, going a little crazy in her own words. And the relationship gets soured, and this is like coming back around to who she is after all that pain. It's called Still a Lover. But oh, how the tables turn, honey. You stick around if I'm looking. So dramatic, emotionally revealing finale. And it has that piano in it, like Cherry Valley did, where it almost sounds like a theme song to a soap opera, like Young and the Restless or something.
Yeah, it does.
But, you know, rediscovering her capacity for love after heartbreak and all of that. Unlike the earlier tracks that focus more on defiance or pain, this one focuses more on emotional softening and finds someone who makes her open to love again. And she's still a lover at heart. So it's a nice bookend to the opener. At first, I thought the album ran long, but the more times I listened to it, the less I thought that.
Mm-hmm. What is the length? Do you know?
I think it's about 55 minutes. But consistent with the cinematic and traditional country blend, the track features like the sweeping strings, and her vocals are really nice, especially on these the ballads that the second half has a lot of. But it does provide that emotional resolution to the earlier themes. I think it's good. It's nice.
Yeah. And her vocals on this one, there's a little bit of like huskiness to it or something, but it's still warm.
Yeah,
she's definitely a vocal talent.
And I think kind of what you were talking about with Sam Fender, this is like, you know, especially since neither of us featured here legacy acts. We featured people that are carrying on musical traditions that are young and will potentially have long careers ahead and influence other people. I love that. I love that that's how this episode turned out for 2025, that we weren't just grabbing on to, Pearl Jam put out another album. I think it's good that there are these young artists that are carrying things on. So why don't we get our heads straight, rewind and reflect on Cherry Valley. My clickbait headline to describe the album: modern country with mud on its boots. Carter Faith makes a debut that feels lived in and proud of its influences.
Lived in.
It's a story-driven album, narrative, that chronological unfolding of Cherry Valley through Grudge and If I Had Never Lost My Mind and The End Was Still a Lover. And that warm, intimate vocal, the pacing really does ensure that the listener feels her emotional evolution throughout the record. Well done.
Well, my clickbait headline is Small Town Heartbreak, Big Feelings. Cherry Valley turns bad habits into modern country confessions.
Ooh, yeah, you out headlined me. I love that.
It's funny that we both kind of picked storytelling albums. Mm-hmm. You know? We must be rubbing off on each other.
rephrase.
I am appreciating the sound, you know, that kind of old-timey feel, but, you know, with a modern sheen or something.
Yeah. Okay, Killer to Filler. I didn't detect really any filler. Like I said, at first, I thought it was a little long, but I couldn't find the moments I thought should be not there. Killer-wise, Cherry Valley, great. Grudge, great. If I'd Never Lost My Mind.
Oh, yeah. I like that one.
Love that one. The arrangement is quieter and confessional, but it goes from blame to self-awareness, where Betty was like this beautiful woman that she assumed her boyfriend wasn't around, and she was imagining that he was cheating on her with Betty.
It's like Jolene.
Yes. And, you know, but the phrasing, the fun, the I bet he is with her. I bet he's with Betty right now. And it's fun, but then you start to understand what's going on as you listen to it more. It's like, oh, he probably isn't with Betty.
Yeah.
And that's when she gets to the If I Had Never Lost My Mind. And then from that point, the relationship continues to crumble.
Yeah. A lot of these songs you kind of figure out the more and more you hear them.
Yeah.
I really like Misery Loves Company. About the, you know, the relationship where the two are together because they both like, you know, misery or so. They're both fond of being miserable or something.
Yeah. And I think that's when everything, when they're just going through the motions of having a relationship still after everything had been broken when she lost her mind. And I mean, in an interview I saw, she said that I really did go off the deep end and help to poison the relationship. You know, there's a two-way street kind of a thing. Mm-hmm. But in that same part of the album, Six String, there was a line in there and it says, you played me like a six string and wonder why I gently weep. And a little Beatles, you know, while my guitar gently weeps, I was like, right on. Like those things, those are like cred when songwriters do that. I'm like, you're doing your due diligence. You're familiar with other music. You're peppering it in. Sometimes in country music, they overdo it.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
You know, they mention John Mellencamp more often than they should. Sometimes it feels manufactured. This doesn't. And that's why I think I enjoyed it so much. Any fillers or anything for you on this?
No fillers for me. All the songs, I think, stand alone as being great, but they all, you know, kind of work together as well, you know, as a kind of a coherent piece.
Production-wise, very full. The early tracks are open and bright. The middle tracks tighten up emotionally, and the late tracks are intimate and reflective. I think the production choices mirror the timeline. The dynamics grow, they peak and resolve, and it's good.
I read somewhere, a couple places, people comparing it to like Nancy Sinatra, like the vocal treatments on her voice, which I, you know, I don't know Nancy's catalog.
Other than Boots Are Made for Walking, that's the only thing I know.
Yeah, it's just interesting that, you know, multiple people kind of pointed to this similarity to Nancy Sinatra's like sultry delivery and I think the vocal treatment.
And that 60s vibe, which I think is probably what some of that is evoking. Replay value for me, extremely high. When I listen to it start to finish because of the narrative timeline, I think I like that. And then eventually you just give in and go, oh, okay, I get it.
Yeah.
So yeah, I think fans will pick up on new narrative details and lyrical Easter eggs on every listen. And that makes it even more enjoyable, like I mentioned, to listen to when you're looking for the next thing. What'd she just say? What, you know, where's Waldo in every song?
Yeah, I agree with that. I think that's the main reason, you know, I'll continue to listen to it.
Legacy-wise, again, you know, young artists and you never know. But it's a debut album that definitely commands attention for its approach, its honesty, its solid songwriting. Stands out among 2025 country releases for sure. And I think Carter Faith's an emerging voice in country music. We'll see what happens. But she has distinguished herself by prioritizing the full album experience rather than focusing on singles. I think that's a good sign.
Yeah, and I'm glad we're in on an artist right at the beginning, so we'll be able to follow her, you know, her path.
Right, so, oh, I've been listening to Carter Faith for a year, man. Yeah, I've heard of her. All right, so Cherry Valley is a patient, story-driven country album that unfolds like a lived-in memory rather than a collection of songs. Check it out.
Can you dig it? Can you dig it? Can you dig it?
Yeah, so we've reached the end of 2025, and we've discussed a lot of excellent albums.
Excellent!
Is there anything you think you'll be digging in 2026?
See, now this is when it comes to more legacy artists, because you don't know. Right. Like, I don't know in 2026 if the most...
Right, who's the next Sam Fender?
Or the next Prince arrives. Who knows?
Right.
I look forward to it if it does. But in the meantime, I'll be looking forward to Megadeth's self-titled Megadeth, January 23rd of 2026. Legendary American thrash metal band formed in 83 by Dave Mustaine. Known as one of the big four of thrash alongside Metallica, Slayer, and Anthrax. Their last album was from 2022, The Sick and the Dying. This one is probably their last. They're going on their final tour. Dave Mustaine is retiring. Mm. So the idea is this will be their final album. But the track list apparently is a blend of classic thrash energy and more reflective themes, but also includes a bonus reimagined version of Ride the Lightning, the Metallica song that because he was in Metallica. Yeah. Wow. Originally, and they fired him right before the first record was made. So apparently his rendition of that song is one of the releases. So I'm looking forward to checking that out. Yeah. As well as Jay Buchanan, Weapons of Beauty, comes out February 6, 2026. He's the singer and songwriter of the Rival Sons, one of my favorite bands, blues rock. He has a wide-ranging voice, roots-influenced blues. He can do jazzy scat stuff too, so I'm interested to see what he does as a solo artist. Produced by Dave Cobb, who produces all the Rival Sons albums as well. 10 tracks, and we'll see. We'll see what it's like. I don't know what Jay's like without the Rival Sons, so I'm looking forward to hearing that. I imagine it'll probably be a little more intimate, but he'll explore themes of love, memory. That's what they do. What about you, Don? What will you be digging?
I think you had actually mentioned this on a digging before, Joe Jackson.
Yes.
So that's, one of those new wave artists that I haven't spent a lot of time with. And so maybe that's another resolution this year is to check him out. He's actually going to be, performing in the area. So I was thinking about going to see him. But he has
going to wear the patent leather white shoes that you had as a kid.
Because
he has them on the cover of his debut album, right?
Good idea.
Thanks.
So the new album's called Hope and Fury. There's already a single or two available. So looking forward to that. And I'm going to jinx it probably, but supposedly there's a Cure album coming this year.
Okay.
I won't, until there's a release date, I'm...
if there's a release date, you can't. they've been pulled before.
Yeah, but they did report that they recorded 13 songs back in March. And this is that same chunk of songs that the last album came from. So
those are a good chunk of songs.
Yeah, so I'm, I'm hopeful for a new Cure title in 2026. So what will you be digging in 2026? Let us know. Join us on the socials, Facebook, Instagram, Threads, and Blue Sky at Album Nerds.
It will be a discovery of extraordinary value.
Well, it's about the time in the year, the end, when I'm reminded of the words of the Irish poet, playwright, and author Oscar Wilde. Good resolutions are simply checks that men draw on a bank where they have no account.
Wow.
Ouch. Yes. Promises you're never going to keep. Real nice, Oscar. With that in mind, let's bring out the Wheel of Musical Discovery to see what kind of albums we'll be discovering next time.
Next time, we kick off our I Love the 80s series with 1980. Big hair, bold sounds, and a brand new decade. The episode will dive into two genres, rock and soul R&B, spotlighting two albums that launched the 80s with style, swagger, and serious groove.
I love the 80s. Do you love the 80s?
I love the 80s.
Yeah, I totally love the 80s, and that's what we will be exploring year by year. So the one twist is the Wheel of Musical Discovery will be choosing the genres for us in each year. So next time, it'll be rock and R&B. Ooh, from 1980.
Gnarly.
Tubular. Awesome. Totally awesome.
What was your favorite record from 2025? What's your favorite record from 1980? What else are you listening to? Email us at podcast@albumnerds.com or follow us on Instagram and other social media at Album Nerds. And you can visit albumnerds.com to listen to all 319 episodes. And the best way to support our show is to share it. Please subscribe, rate, and review on your favorite podcast app.
Thank you so much for joining us here at the end of 2025 on the Album Nerds podcast. We will catch you next time, getting into some more comfortable territory, 1980.
Well, you said you were going to play more guitar this this year. I'm going to play more talk box.
Oh, no. It took me a while to figure out you were doing Auld Lang Syne. Yeah. Beautiful, Don. That's definitely the best way to bring in the new year. The little Donnie talk box.
Yeah. Making progress already.
God, that's so creepy. He said Happy New Year. Bye-bye. See you next year, everybody.